Looks like Bill did the last episode and I did the one before that.
So Andy and I take one each?
That works for me.
Okay.
And I just get to sit back here and be high-priced talent.
Okay, so not to spoil our ratings, but Andy, do you want the good one or the bad one?
Not to spoil our ratings. Andy, do you want the bad one or the worst one?
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
You Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garrett. Plain, simple, Garrett.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
It's much more to become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast. And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro.
Bloody hell. Oh, I love a woman in uniform.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast in which me and my compadres go over every episode of the Deep Space Nine TV series, one by one, tearing it apart, ripping it a new one, and seeing what's left. Today, I am joined, as always, by Mr. Andrew Leyland.
Hello!
And Andy and I are joined by our buddy, Dr. Bill Robinson.
Hello!
And Dr. Bill, having thrown down the gauntlet and challenged Blaine Dalla to a fight, we've brought in a surprise for Bill today. Welcome, Blaine, to the podcast.
Thanks for having me back.
You're welcome, but you know, right now I'm holding you back so you don't tear Bill a new one.
Let's get ready to rumble!
I didn't throw down a gauntlet.
I believe your exact words were, "the gauntlet is thrown."
He's so scared he ran. Come on, Skype. You back, yeah. Dr. Bill?
Yeah.
So Blaine was just saying that you're a chicken man.
I don't think he said that, Paul.
Well, I'm paraphrasing. Blaine is a scientist. He's a man of science. He doesn't use such terminology, but I'm just translating it to normal speak.
Oh, so he would have said avian being?
Well, look at the big brain on Bill.
I think you just poking the bear in both directions, Paul.
I don't know. I'm just seeing what went on and I'm running with it.
I believe to be fair it was actually Paul who said the gauntlet was thrown.
Yes.
Well, let's not quibble over little things such as that.
Yes, like the truth.
Let's not let the facts get in the way.
Well, no. I mean, if Americans let the facts get in the way, we'd have a completely different election going on right now.
Is there an election going on?
I'm sure I saw a picture yesterday where Linda Carter was president.
Oh, that would be great.
But just the same, we're here today, and Bill said, I think, you know, I'm paraphrasing a little bit. I think he said, if Blaine is man enough to face me, he'll come on the show. I think those are the words.
Yes, Paul, that's exactly what I said. You are right, sir. You're always right. You always tell the truth.
No, he doesn't. No!
Well, yeah, it's not like there's a permanent record out there so listeners can check to see who said what.
Yeah, Paul.
So just to get, you know, cut to the chase here, the whole topic was Rogue Planet. I think, and now I'm not joking, I think Bill said, I'm calling BS on this. And what we did say was, well, you know, you give your reasons why it doesn't, and we'll ask Blaine as our resident scientific consultant whether or not what you're saying makes sense or not. I think that's really a more fair way of putting it.
I think what I was basing that on was needing plant life and oxygen. And thinking a little further, I guess if you had life forms maybe based on something else, which the shapeshifters do appear to be, that obviously they probably don't need oxygen, because my whole thing was that you would need photosynthesis, sunlight, etc., etc., is why I was calling. Like, I don't think you could have a Class M Earth-like rogue planet. Maybe you could have the somewhat desolate planet that was like that.
But if I remember correctly in the episode, they did say it was a Class M oxygen atmosphere planet, and the crew was able to go down with any type of breathing devices. Am I wrong about that?
But I think the founders did that. They probably have technology on the planet generating the oxygen to facilitate races, maybe mainly the Jem'Hadar, since they appear to breathe oxygen. Maybe that's mechanically done. So I'll shut up now and let our illustrious guest.
So what you're saying is, I withdraw everything I said. Please don't.
No.
Look at him. He's running again. Lane hasn't even said a word yet. Yeah. He's running.
Oh, dear. Yes. I think Skype's not our friend today.
And he's back again. All right, so Blaine, I'm going to let you address this, and if Bill starts to interfere, I'm going to mute him, so don't worry.
Okay, basically what we know about the planet, we know from two episodes. There's the Search Part 1, where I looked up some transcripts to make sure I've got the quotes exact here. When Kira wakes up with Odo at the end of that episode, she says, "I was unconscious, have you found anything?" Checks the sensors and says, "There's a Class M planet, no star system. A rogue planet?" Odo says yes. So we do know that at the time they find it, or at least at the time Kira and Odo find it, it is a rogue planet that is Class M. And then we know in the next episode that the way the female changeling explains it, to the degree that they can be trusted, is that the solids feared our metamorphic abilities, so we were beaten, hunted, and killed. Finally, we arrived here, and safe in isolation, we made our home. Now, when you guys talked about it the first time, Bill, you were questioning whether or not they had enough oxygen for Kira to breathe. And you called her out specifically more so than the changelings, because even then, at that point, we recognized that the changelings may not have the same biological processes that, you know, humans and other species do. And I think it was Andy that pulled up quotes from the scientific advisor who said that if it's got the right geological activities, it's right on the edge of credibility. I am actually in line with what Bill was saying today, where a naturally occurring M-class planet that's a rogue planet is, you know, extremely difficult to believe. Just looking at what we need for humanity, we have to be not just in the right spot in terms of our orbit, but Earth positioned here in our solar system without a moon would not support human life either. The tidal forces that pull the oceans around because of the gravitational interplay between the moon and the sun also affect the atmosphere. So if we didn't have our moon, the atmosphere wouldn't be breathable because it would be much, much thicker and closer to Venus's atmosphere. So things like hydrogen and helium that are boiled off by the heat from the sun to escape the atmosphere would still be missing, but oxygen, carbon dioxide, and the other molecules that are too heavy to be boiled off by our atmosphere this close to the sun are partially stripped away by the moon. So if you had just Earth free as a rogue planet, if we somehow got loose from our solar system, if we got loose today, we actually wouldn't bring the moon with us, because technically the moon is not a moon. If you plotted its orbit in 3D, the moon is actually orbiting the sun and not Earth. The moon's orbit is not always concave in the direction of Earth, but it is always concave in the direction of the sun. So we're technically a double planet, and we're just perturbing each other's orbits. You could knock Earth out of this orbit, the moon would stay behind. Over time, it would accumulate the hydrogen that we find out in interstellar space, and the atmosphere would get too thick for human-type life to breathe. And it would be the same sort of thing with this rogue planet, but that is the solution, the one that Bill thought of in the interim, is that, yeah, terraforming technology is something that you would probably be able to obtain before you come up with interstellar travel technology. So by the time the changelings found that rogue planet, it could have been enough to sustain them, but not enough to sustain, you know, your Bajorans, not enough to sustain your Jem'Hadar, until they turned it into that.
And there goes our Space 1999 podcast.
Well, I hope Bill doesn't have to lick his wounds too much after that scathing attack you just put on him there. If only he were in the quote.
I'm here.
So I just said that you have to lick your wounds after that scathing attack.
I don't think that was a scathing attack. I think I was, although I... dropped the call twice, I think I was somewhat justified in my findings.
Oh, please.
Yeah, it's what it essentially boils down to is that the thoughts that hadn't occurred to you when you spoke about it when you're recording the search, but you thought of in between, are basically the only way to solve this. Because, yeah, a rogue planet naturally occurring that's Class M, that's something that I don't buy either.
Mm. Cool. I don't ever agree with Bill again.
Bill, which episode do you think we're doing now?
Did you watch it?
Yes, I watched it like 2 weeks ago. It's the one with Tho Riker.
Friker. So, you know what? Since he came along to do his scientific explanation, I'm going to let Blaine do the description of this one as well.
You once knew him as Commander Riker.
Hope you've got room for the unexpected.
But after stealing Starfleet's most powerful warship...
The defiant shields are off.
What? Has he become the galaxy's deadliest enemy?
The ship was built to fight.
And will his shocking secret...
It's headed directly into the heart of Cardassian territory.
Result in a full-scale invasion.
Fire!
Next time on Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Okay, this plot synopsis comes courtesy of the writers of Wikipedia. William T. Riker arrives on Deep Space Nine and proceeds to charm the crew, especially Major Kira. She takes him on a tour of the station and its new ship, the Defiant. Once aboard, he draws a phaser and stuns her, fakes a warp core breach, and steals the ship. Back on the station, the crew realizes it is not Will Riker, but his duplicate Thomas Riker, who had been created in a transporter accident and stranded on a planet 9 years earlier and was rescued about 2 years ago. See Second Chances, the Next Generation episode. He is suspected to have joined the Maquis. The heavily armed Defiant in their hands now poses a serious threat to Cardassian forces. Commander Sisko is faced with the challenge of retrieving the Defiant intact while avoiding an incident with Cardassia that may start a war. He agrees to travel to Cardassia Prime to cooperate with a Cardassian operation led by Gul Dukat to hunt Riker down. After infiltrating Cardassian space and attacking an outpost, Riker takes the Defiant to the Arias system, which he believes contains a secret shipbuilding facility. When Sisko analyzes Riker's movements and realizes his true target, Dukat, believing the system to be barren and of no value, orders his ships to intercept. His Obsidian Order observer, Koronos, however, warns him that any ship that approaches the system will be destroyed, Cardassian or otherwise. As the Order is strictly forbidden from possessing military equipment of any kind, Dukat becomes suspicious. The Defiant manages to outrun its pursuers into the Arias system, but is confronted by several more Cardassian ships appearing from the system itself. On Cardassia, Dukat's displays show the ship as well, but he determines they are not under the control of Central Command. With the Defiant trapped between the two fleets, Sisko arranges a deal with Dukat. In exchange for the Defiant's sensor logs of the system, the Defiant will surrender to Dukat's lead ship and will be returned along with its crew to the Federation, and Riker will be sentenced to a Cardassian labor camp rather than to death. Kira persuades Riker to accept the terms. The opposing ships approach the Defiant and its Cardassian escorts, but abort the confrontation and return to the Arias system. Riker beams to the Cardassian ship, leaving Kira in control to return to the station. I think, you know, and as I mentioned before we started recording, I think that, you know, I may have a slightly skewed view of this episode because it followed immediately after Meridian.
Mm.
And I actually think that casting Jonathan Frakes in here may have caused some of the issues in Meridian. Because typically they film an episode and then it goes into post-production the week later. So the Meridian director was tied up acting in the next episode, which makes me think maybe he wasn't there to kind of steer the ship on Meridian, which could be why. At least I thought it was a mess. I haven't heard your guys' episode about that yet because it hasn't aired yet. But
we were not kind to it, if that's okay. Your question.
All right,
just to recap, me and Andy both gave it a 2.0. And Bill gave it a 2.5.
Yeah, and I think the email I sent you said, you know, if you want to watch this, go watch Brigadoon instead.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Oh, yes, that was the, that was the one that...
The people that come into existence and then fade away.
I gave it a 2.5 because I thought half of it was good and half of it sucked. So I put it right in the middle.
But speaking about Defiant... I'm going to give you the positive first. I liked the fact that they had this Cardassian place that even the Cardassian government wasn't aware of because of the, I'm drawing a blank on the secret order, the Obsidian order. That they're working independent of the government. They have these ships that the government doesn't even know about, that they're not supposed to have, and that they're basically more powerful than the Cardassian government. And I really like that, and that they get exposed by what goes on in this episode. So from a world-building point of view, I'm giving this a positive review. And there my positivity ends. Other than, you know, a little bit of Gul Dukat, which I always enjoy. Because I thought Riker... You know, before we started recording, we were talking about Tom Cruise. And my criticism of Tom Cruise as an actor is frequently that he gets into camera and he smiles what he thinks is his million-dollar smile, and everyone's supposed to fall in love with him because of it. And he's substituting his smile for actual charm. And I thought that's what we got with Riker in this episode. He came onto the screen and he flashed his big grin, and all the women just swooned because of it, namely Dax and Nerisse. And I just thought, this is stupid. I don't like this. I don't agree with it. It bothers me. And I didn't see any of the Will Riker. I didn't see any of Will Riker in this. I guess, you know, it's Tom Riker. It's not Will, so he's supposed to be a little bit different. But it just seemed hollow to me, and it really just didn't play well. And I thought, really, when all was done, except for the information about the Obsidian Order, there was nothing about this episode that I wanted to carry with me further.
I think you were threatened by Thomas Riker's manliness.
Well, that's a given. I'm threatened by Quark's manliness.
I'm threatened by Kira's manliness.
Well, she would beat the crap out of us easier than either of those two would.
Although, you gotta hand it to Julian for standing up to her. Stop right there.
Yeah. I think this is one of those times where we're actually going to be in disagreement, because I really like this one. I like that it builds on the history that we've had so far, because as we've said, now we're into the third season, it's starting to become Deep Space Nine. I liked them bringing in Tom Riker, which was a loose end from The Next Generation, even though that never really actually gets tied off satisfactorily, because we never see him again. I thought everybody in this one was brilliant. Dukat was brilliant, Sisko was brilliant, Kira almost walks away with the episode. And when you've got an episode that's got Dukat in it, fair play to her. It just shows how powerful Nana Visitor was when she was given the material. I didn't object too much to the Tom Riker stuff at the beginning because, and sorry, all apologies, Next Generation viewers, I always thought Riker was a big stiff anyway. I thought he was a terrible commanding officer. He was a bit boring. He treated subordinates terribly if they weren't the bridge crew. So I didn't mind seeing him a bit more relaxed here in the guise of Tom, because maybe that's why everybody loved him. What he was like off duty that I never saw.
Because he smiled like Tom Cruise,
yeah. And the best Tom Cruise films are like Oblivion, where he doesn't flash that smile. He actually has a decent movie. So I really enjoyed it, largely because of the Sisko-Dukat interaction, I have to confess. Although there is an implication here that Riker's had Dax and Kira. Mm-hmm. And Deanna. So, like, is he just working his way through every one of the main females? And Jonathan Frakes is the only opening credit actor to have an appearance in every show other than the original. That's just a bit of trivia.
Yeah. Deanna Troi was it? Oh, I guess she wasn't. Because she was on Enterprise, but she wasn't here, huh?
Yeah, she was on Voyager.
She was on Voyager and she was on Enterprise.
She was on Voyager?
But she never did a Deep Space Nine.
Riker was on Voyager,
yes, he's in a Q episode.
Yeah, that one's fairly early on. Q brings him over and that, you know, sends him back with a wiped out memory. So.
But I found Riker to be vacuous in this episode, and that's really what took away from it. I never saw why the Maquis people were following his orders, to be honest with you.
Well, I think that was actually played into the writing. Tom Riker doesn't know who he is. And Kira actually spells that out to him in a number of her speeches to him, where she actually says, you're not a terrorist, you're no good at this. And he's not got the heart. And I think that's ultimately the point of the show. He is a vacuous cipher. He didn't exist before Second Chance is brought in. And he's a clone of Will Riker. He doesn't have a life. He doesn't have an identity. And this is him very much doing that teenage thing of lashing out and trying very much to be different from what he's expected to be in an effort to try and form who he is. And he makes a colossal mistake. He's not a Maquis member. He is no good at it because he's not got that killer instinct. He doesn't really believe in what he's doing enough to hurt anybody. So he's not very good as a terrorist.
This is... I largely agree with that. That's one of the reasons I like this. I like what they did with Tom Riker. Because, as you said, Next Gen didn't seem to go anywhere with him. Whereas Deep Space Nine is about exploring character depth and the possibilities. They're the ones who said... Okay, you have someone who, for all intents and purposes, was Will Riker through all his formative years, and then he spent 7 years stranded alone, thinking the Federation had abandoned him, living off the land. So, you know, all of a sudden, now he's the guy that got left behind. He's the guy with the chip on his shoulder. He comes back to the modern Federation, finds out, well, his old career path is shot because he's got this duplicate out there. You know, there's no reason to prefer Will Riker over Tom Riker in terms of who's the true Riker. It's just one got out, the other one didn't. So he lost all the opportunities he could have had to a duplicate of him, as far as he's concerned, not the other way around. Now he discovers the Maquis. Here's a people who are in serious socioeconomic trouble because they were left behind and because they're not being protected by the Federation. I can see him moving to the Maquis very easily because of their similar histories. But because he really wants to be a true Star Trek or Starfleet officer at heart, you say he doesn't cross lines that they cross. Like, you know, like Kira tells him, terrorists are just out there to hurt the enemy. It wouldn't be this strategic thing where you're going into the Arias system to wipe out the shipbuilding facility and expose what these rebels within the Cardassian government are up to. They would have been hit every target along the way.
Mm. Yeah. So, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. But that's all well and good. And I don't argue with any of the points you're making.
That's all well and good, but I still don't like it.
Well, you know what it is? That's all subtext that actually isn't in the episode, though. It's you both, and I commend you for it, but it's you both taking the episode and reading into it with things that they're not showing us or giving us. It's you giving a motivation to the character that they never really give us. And like I said, I commend you for it because I think it does make sense and it's a clever way to look at it, but I don't think the episode ever gives us that. I think the episode gives us this empty guy with no motivation, and it's leaving it up to you to no-prize it and create a motivation in your mind for him.
What Kira does explicitly state at one point, you're trying to differentiate yourself from that other Will Riker. You're trying to stand out and figure out who you are, right? Like Andy said, that's in one of her speeches to him right at the end. And that's where it's coming through, because she's the first one to say the other Will Riker and not just call him Tom, like he is the lesser and he is the copy. So yeah, a lot of that is what's reading into it, but I don't think it's reading much past what they already have in the dialogue. When everyone's calling him either Will because they think he is, or Tom, and I like that. I like the fact that, you know, if you go back through Next Gen and watch it in sequence, you know, they make multiple mentions about how Riker is something of a ladies man. And then we know Dax met him before. Like Andy said, there's a strong implication where she's like, oh, you met Will Riker? Well, tell me what happened, with this giant grin on her face. Which is going, and then. So clearly she's expected that Will Riker and Kira hooked up based on her past experience meeting Riker.
And part of the problem I have is I don't see chemistry between Will Riker and anybody. So I don't understand why they're reacting this way to him. Like, oh my God, isn't he just the dreamiest? You know, I just don't see it. I don't see it at any point in this show, and it just seems totally unjustified to me.
Yeah, I will agree that part of Will Riker's character is something that I saw to a degree in here because it was such a big part of his character throughout Next Gen and it was established there. If you were watching Deep Space Nine and Deep Space Nine alone and never saw Next Gen, you'd be going, what? What? Where's that coming from? Because that was not established here.
Especially in the teaser moment when he walks up and he's like, oh, I don't remember exactly what he says, but something like, I hope you're ready for some excitement. And he just gives that big, stupid Tom Cruise grin. And it just made me, like, I would have been like, who the hell do you think you are, dude? If I was a chick.
Yeah, and if you didn't watch Next Gen, you might be going, who is this guy? Right? Because they were banking on the audience recognizing him. To do that teaser. I mean, I think some of this, it feels knowing that he directed Meridian last week, you know, before this one, it feels to me like when they were saying, okay, we want to bring in another cast member from Next Gen for the ratings boost, who's available to guest star, maybe they spoke to when he directed earlier in the season and said, you know, hey, would you mind guest starring? And because Frakes himself was trying to get more into directing, he said, sure, I'll do it if you direct another one. And so in my mind, I see the producer saying, yeah, sure, so we'll put you in Defiant, and then give me that script that no one else wants to touch. Here, you could direct this one.
Well, also, isn't there some synergy going on here? Wasn't this the time of First Contact's release?
I believe it was close to it.
So there's some of that as well. I mean, to go back to what Paul said, yeah, just based on this episode alone, you don't get Riker's charm. But I'll be honest with you, I never got that in Next Gen either. I never thought that Jonathan Frakes, all due respect, lovely man, but I never got that Riker had the charm that William Shatner had. When Shatner turned on the charm in the original show, when he was flirting with women, you would totally believe that they would fall for him. And I never got that with Will Riker. So I never bought that he's charmed his way into Dax, he's charmed his way into Kira. I didn't buy that at all, to be fair to what Paul's saying. But we are bringing the baggage over from the Next Generation, where we were told that a lot, that he was a ladies man, even though we didn't actually see that much of it.
The way Next Generation was written, you know, he only spent the night in another crew member's quarters when you saw him wearing the same outfit 2 days in a row.
Yeah. So, you know.
I did check while we were talking. This episode aired 4 days after Star Trek Generations came out, not Star Trek First Contact.
Generations.
Which makes sense, because as director of First Contact, he probably would be doing a little too much to direct Deep Space Nine at the same time.
I thought there was a film tie-in with it somewhere. Because it does lead, again, to follow up on what Paul was just saying, it does lead into that god-awful reveal where he reveals his Tom just by pulling his sideburns off.
Oh, God. I forgot about that, actually. That's so terrible.
It's shockingly bad, isn't it? Like, we're suddenly meant to go, oh, right, he's a different person.
Well, that's like Kananga revealing himself by pulling his face off in Live and Let Die.
this is coming back to Star Trek history. Oh, he's the Riker with the goatee, not the full beard. He's the evil one. Because it's always the evil dude who gets with the goatee.
But, you know, the other thing about it that just I couldn't let go was, don't they know where Will Riker is? This guy just shows up at DS9 and says, oh yeah, that must be Will Riker. I mean, I understand his DNA and everything is the same. But, you know, he's a high-ranking Starfleet officer. You don't think there's a log as to where he is?
If this is following Generations, the Enterprise has just blown up. It's entirely possible Riker's got nothing to do and he's on leave somewhere. So there's no reason to believe that they wouldn't believe his story just on the face of it. I mean, it would have been nice for them to just follow up on Generations a little bit more and say, well, with the destruction of the Enterprise, I'm taking some of my accumulated leave time. And then they would be like, all right, well, we've no reason to follow up on what he's saying. And yeah, the Enterprise has just been blown up at Viridian 3. That's all over the news.
Yeah, see, I believe that the human and Bajoran, like the crew played by actors, would have no reason to doubt it. I would suspect, though, that his comm badge would be keyed to Thomas Riker and not Will Riker. So the station logs would have registered it was Thomas when he came aboard and not Will. So I think this is a question of, you know, everyone knew and trusted Will. He said he was Will. They had no reason to believe otherwise until the Defiant was stolen. And then the investigation to reveal that it wasn't Will and must actually be Tom would have taken about 30 seconds. Also, as soon as they started looking into it, it's like, oh, that's what happened. Damn it.
Really? That's kind of, you just expressed it better than I did. But also, just, you know, I always took Will Riker, and Andy, you know, I understand your criticisms of him, but I always took him as a character who has a very high moral or responsibility compass. And for him to just be this lost soul the way they're presenting him, the way you guys read into it too, just doesn't seem totally true to me. I see Will Riker as the type that, in that situation where he's presented with, now all of a sudden he's Thomas Riker and he's a, you know, the man without a country, effectively, that he would take the bull by the horns and just show that he's every bit as good as his doppelganger, and not by necessarily joining a terrorist organization. I would think he would be looking to take Starfleet by storm and maybe even get to his own captaincy quicker than Will Riker did.
No, well, see,
I think that'd be actually would have been a good episode of Next Gen had they carried on. That Tom's made captain because he's not got that love affair going on with Picard that Will's got. He's not distracted by Deanna. He's not got fat and comfortable on the Enterprise. And I think it would have been cool to have seen that Tom made captain before Will did.
And that would have been cool too if they CGI'd it so you'd have fat Will Riker and skinny Tom Riker.
Well, now that I'm back in the call, and hopefully I'll be able to stay in here.
Oh, are you still here?
Yeah. After restarting my computer and other things. I'm not quite sure if I'm going to double back on some things that you've already said, but I think that Tom Riker, I just caught what you were saying, Paul, that you don't think that Will Riker would have done this, but this kind of make, and it would make him somewhat of an more interesting character to be a foil for Will Riker in becoming captain, succeeding to where Will hasn't. But this Will Riker, Tom, he was stuck on the planet for 7 years. He comes back. The woman that he, you know, had an affair with is no longer his. His whole life has been co-opted by the other Will Riker, or the real Will Riker. So I think this, you know, and they kind of touch on it in the episode. He's trying to find, he wants to differentiate himself so much from Will Riker. That's why he's gone this way. It, like, he's the anti-Riker.
That's similar to the way that Blaine and Andy see it. So I'm not really the one dissenter on that particular opinion. But I see it as almost a fan fiction type look at it from the point of view of, this is a guy who was supposed to, again, I thought he was supposed to have a very, very high responsibility and moral compass. And you're saying, okay, you know what, now we're only using him for one episode, so we can corrupt him and co-opt him and treat it as if he doesn't have that. But this is supposed to be Will Riker still, and I just...
Yeah,
I
but he was stuck on a planet for...
personality being so different.
You know what? Stick you in solitary isolation for 7 years, and let's see what you come out as.
Oh, that's my life anyway.
Yeah, I'm the guy that lives in a garage, so, you know, in my own home. So,
so I mean, I understand your perspective on it, and all three of you have basically agreed with that. So I am the one dissenter. So I'm going to say majority rules. You guys are right. I'm wrong, except for the fact that I'm
no,
right.
We don't think that.
No, yes,
but I mean,
we do.
Obviously, it's a valid point of view if all three of you agree on it. That's, I mean, I have no issue with that at all. Even if only one of you did, I still think it was valid. But I am definitely in the minority here. There's no question. It just doesn't seem true to the character of the person who I saw on Next Generation for so many years. And it seems like they did it for the purposes of a plot point.
Okay. Do you think in the end, when he does basically take the fall for the rest of them, does he come back to his true Will Riker self?
I think, yes. I think then he is doing what Will Riker would do, except for the fact that I think Sisko had to create the Will Riker scenario for him instead of him doing it on his own.
It was the no-win Will Riker scenario.
He put himself in the Kobayashi Maru. He showed himself as a very weak captain in that situation. I mean, he did serve his final goal of, you know, revealing the what was going on, but he also put his crew into a death situation that he wasn't going to get out of. He was sacrificing his crew.
And if you go back to that first season of Next Generation, when Will Riker was only about a year and a half removed of having that duplicate created, if you look in most of those situations, he's right there with Worf saying, no, let's go in guns blazing. And he learns not to take the aggressive military thing by watching Picard's success through those first couple of years. You actually do see some change in his thought process.
He learns that there's victory through surrender.
Yeah, or at least through negotiation and debate, and guns blazing isn't necessarily the way to go. This Tom Riker is closer to that. So he still has that guns blazing attitude. Plus, as you know, Bill and the rest of us have pointed out, 7 years of solitary confinement, you know, feeling abandoned by the Federation. So the Will Riker that we know from Next Gen wouldn't have done this, but this is not that Will Riker anymore. He's had, you know, 9 years of alternate experiences to change in a different direction than the Will Riker we knew had changed.
Okay, so you're accepting, and I'm not saying this is an invalid argument in any way, shape, or form. You're accepting that the core values of Will Riker have changed.
To a degree, yeah.
Whereas I'm saying the core values would remain the same. His actions might be different, but that the core values would not change. And that's the thing I'm having trouble acclimating myself to.
Okay.
And how much of him, when he's come back, is now him being compared to Will?
Yeah.
Or Will keeps doing this, and Will's first officer here, and Will's accomplished all of this. And this is subtext, obviously, this isn't in the show. But there may be just elements that are jealousy towards Will that have changed him as well since he's been back.
So he effectively should be saying, Marsha, Marsha, Marsha.
No, he should be Captain Kirk going, I'm Will Riker.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah. I mean, just out of curiosity, any of you guys go to the same school as a successful older sibling?
Nope.
Nope.
I'm the most successful sibling.
That's... Yeah, I mean, my sister's older, and we ended up getting about comparable marks, but yeah, to what Andy's just saying about having two Will Rikers there, I had more than one teacher going, oh, you're Tanya's brother? Okay, well, this is what I'm going to expect from you. And, you know, you can take two attitudes to that. I took the attitude where it's, well, I'm going to exceed those expectations, whereas others I know who are in similar situations are going, well, I'm going to buck those expectations and do something completely different.
But I don't see Will Riker's personality. And again, in his core, this is still Will Riker, even though they call him Tom. I see him as taking the former, not the latter. I see him as saying, I'm going to exceed what Will Riker has done. And going into the Maquis, just in and of itself, is not doing that.
Yeah, but, okay, you keep saying your core things. I mean, there's certain things I have changed on over years of time.
Oh, but you're a jellyfish. Changed... You're not Will Riker.
Oh, yeah. Oh, come on. Just basic human nature. There's certain things that you can, you know, you could be swayed or you can just come around to a different point of view from a certain point of view on certain things. But that's, I think that's, you know what? We're not going to agree on we're not going to get each other to change our minds on this. I think
I'm going to start putting up memes on Facebook about it.
Because that always changes people's
opinions. Yes, exactly.
So should we bring Paul back on the side of the majority and start talking about the conversation between Sisko and Dukat about Dukat's son's birthday?
I love that. I love that. I thought that was great. So am I back on the majority now?
At least we're on the same side.
I loved all of Dukat's bits in this.
I love when they show that their culture is different, but that deep down inside there are some similarities. And I always liked that in the episode of The Next Generation, Chain of Command, when, what's his name, David, who's the actor? I'm drawing a blank.
David Warner.
David Warner, yeah. I think it's when he's talking to his daughter, and he talks about how humans don't love their children the way we do.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the perception, is that, you know, we're animals and that they're normal. And I think the reverse is true also, that the humans think of the Cardassians as, you know, these lizard people almost, and that they don't have core values the way we do. And again, I'm getting back into core. But, you know, when you start hearing the similarities and that, you know, Dukat's son is going to always think of this as the birthday that he missed because of what was going on with Thomas Riker and all of that, it's so relatable that it just becomes a great moment.
I say, hey, suck it up, kid. Your dad's got a job to do. Sorry. Whiny little Cardassian brat.
I don't know how many birthdays I missed on my kids because I was watching Will Riker on TV. I can't go to the party. Star Trek The Next Generation is on.
I got a show to do.
But it is very relatable. And, you know, what they do with the Cardassians, I think, is they highlight the differences and they highlight the similarities at the same time. And I think that's a great way to present them as a species, because they're not just these lizard people who are out to destroy us. They are, to some extent, regular people, and they think they're doing the right thing.
Yeah, and I like the fact that they showed clearly Dukat does not want war, which is usually when you got the adversarial aliens on Star Trek, you know, whether it's the Klingons or whether it's the Romulans, the big alien that's supposed to be the adversary seems to be hungry for war, whereas Dukat's the one saying, no, I don't want my son growing up thinking of the Federation as what kept his dad away from his birthday, because that is not going to be a good way to view the Federation in the long term. Just the end of that conversation says so much about Dukat It shows that, yeah, you know, there is additional common ground, a part of just being parents. He does really want peace in the Alpha Quadrant. He just, you know, he just wants a more Gartassian style peace. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that that's a good point, and I think that was, I think the Dukat Sisko interchange was the highlight of the episode, as far as I'm concerned. That, and like I said, the world building with finding out about the Obsidian Order, and that they're really controlling Cardassia to so much of an extent, more than even Cardassians realize. But again, that's not what's happening on the screen. That's just a reveal that they give for us. What they're doing on the screen with Will Riker, Thomas Riker, that's the thing I have my problem with. How people react to that is fine.
So did you think when he did the reveal? Well, we knew it was Tom Riker. When he pulled off his beard and he had a goatee, we instantly knew he was evil because he had a goatee.
Yes, as I said, you were cut off the conversation. That was when I thought he came from the Mirror Planet.
Yep.
I do like that we're going to see the Obsidian Order further as things go on. And I also like that eventually we're going to see that Obsidian Order type dark side to the Federation as well.
You know, Section 31?
Yes. I like that not everything is black and white, because that gets boring on a show like this where we're supposed to be seeing conflict.
I think that's what I actually specifically said in the email I sent to you guys about this episode a while ago.
Let's see. What would Blaine say?
What a segue.
Maybe we should have Blaine say what would Blaine say.
Well, I'm looking. Here we go.
Yeah, I've got the email open if you want me to read it.
Sure, please. Hold on. Let me queue up Spanish Flea.
Blaine says.
Whenever you're ready.
Hi, guys. So Frakes directed last week and plays Tom Riker this week. I wonder if the directing job was a stipulation in his acting contract. Still, it's a good exploration of Thomas Riker, who represents an interesting concept that wasn't fully utilized on TNG. This does a great job of the shades of gray in reality. TOS would take on issues, but would clearly pick a right side in most cases. That's easy enough to do when dealing with racism, but here we have terrorism. Not random extremism, but terrorists who have been legitimately wronged, although their methods cannot be condoned. Seeing the interactions between Kira and Tom, where Kira is practically trying to teach Tom how to be a good terrorist in some scenes, really reminds us that one of our heroes was on the wrong side of the law, if still ethical. Compare this to the Sisko Dukat conversation, not between opposing commanders, but between two fathers. This does great work for the characters involved, and shows us that things aren't as simple as black and white as you get in other Trek series. The success of this episode paves the way for much of what will come in the series ahead.
It's a scathing review.
Of your opinion, sure.
Well, you know, I just to kind of try and cut it to the chase, I don't disagree with what you're saying as far as the implications of things to come. I just didn't care for the way that Thomas Riker was presented on many levels, as a terrorist and as a paramour. It just didn't do it for me, and that was the weakness to this episode that made it kind of come down around me. But as far as the implications for the future and the Cardassians and you know, the Federation, how they're going to deal with each other, I thought that was all really good. And the bottom line is, you know, we move on, and Thomas Riker is no longer of any interest to me after this episode.
He wasn't any interest to the producers either. We never see him again.
I think he pops up in the later Deep Space Nine books.
Right.
That's what I was just doing a quick search to see where he goes. Because I kind of fell out of reading the Deep Space Nine books a few years ago. But I know they had a continuing narrative.
Yeah, well, the only other interesting trivia notes from the companion, Trisha O'Neill is Corinus, I think that's her name, in this. She was Rachel Garrett in yesterday's Enterprise, so captain of Enterprise C. And they couldn't afford to build the massive view screen for the Cardassians, which is what Ron Moore specified in the script.
Right.
So that's all green screened.
Yeah, I thought it looked a little hokey, but hey, you know, it's an older show, so, you know.
Yeah, the view screen is actually a miniature, and the actors were filmed against the green screen, because it's the only way they could afford to have that massive view screen in Cardassia Central or Prime or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, it looks just like a cutting-edge video game from 1994.
Yeah, there's a lot of cut scenes in Enterprise watching it now as well.
You want to rate this one?
Yeah, sure, why not?
Blaine did the synopsis, so you lead us off.
Right, so this one, I actually quite enjoyed. I give it a 4.5 out of 5.
High praise indeed. Andrew?
I'm going to lean more towards a 4. If I was Bill, I'd probably go for a 3.8, 3.9. But I'm going to go with a 4.
Doctor?
Since I'm Bill, or am I actually Frank Robinson? I'll go with a 4.
Not Tiberius Robinson.
Well, Frank's my middle name. So.
Doctor, know that I am. I will tell you, you've swayed me to increase my number, but you're still not going to be thrilled with the number. You've given me some other sides. This one, I found this to be a mostly forgettable episode as far as the actual performance on the screen, with the exception of the one poignant moment that Blaine pointed out with the with Ducat talking about his son, and the fact that there's implications with the Obsidian Order. Other than that, I found it to be a forgettable episode. I thought that Riker was just almost an annoying presence in it. It really just did nothing for me, and I don't think I would stop on this if I was going down, going through the channels and I saw it was on. I was going to give it a 2.5, but you've swayed me to bring it up to a 3.
And here's a little something. Maybe this will soothe your wounds. In the ebook, A Weary Life, it was revealed that shortly after the events of Star Trek First Contact, Will Riker still felt betrayed by Thomas's actions in stealing the Defiant. In a conversation with Deanna Troi, it was revealed that Thomas had left the USS Gandhi and her crew to join the Maquis. Thomas had been recaptured by the Cardassians after the attempt to assess... All these feelings had Will questioning his inclusion on a mission to the demilitarized zone assigned by Picard. The feelings came to the surface again when Will met with Kalita, I guess the Obsidian Order chick that was there, and discovered that Thomas had allowed himself to be captured to save his Maquis conspirators. Discovering this led Will to feel pride for his twin, the first positive feeling he'd had since Thomas joined the Maquis.
Oh, it's a very special episode of DS9.
And according to Wikipedia, Kalita was not the Obsidian Order woman. That was Coriness. I think Kalita was Tom's second in command, who was running the helm.
Thanks. Yep.
Okay. And so much for Defiant. Want to try and squeeze in a couple emails?
Yeah.
Captain, incoming message.
I'll do the first. Kira Squared by Gene Hendricks. Paul and Andy, one thing is really obvious in this episode, and that is the actors are having a ball playing different characters, especially Nana Visitor, who is just a notch or two below chewing the scenery, but that's because Avery Brooks already chewed it all before her. True, Cal Meany had to play the downbeat character, but since he's somewhat over the top on a normal episode, that gave him a chance to come at the character from a different angle. I'm actually glad that TNG didn't go to the Mirror Universe, since I don't think it would have worked. That show would have tried to show how Mirror Spock ended up creating this utopia, since there can't be a downside to a Kirk speech. DS9 had no such restriction and showed us that the best of intentions can backfire on you. That just makes for more interesting storytelling, especially if you're dealing with the evil universe. As to origins of the Mirror Universe, I like what they did in A Mirror Darkly on Enterprise. I'll pause as you recover from the shock that I actually liked something on Enterprise. They had the meeting between the Vulcans and humans on Earth, as seen in First Contact, but instead of greeting them with open arms, the humans kill the Vulcans and take their technology for their own, since these people are recovering from a world near-destroying war. That's a reaction that makes sense. Gene, you don't want to get me started on how awful First Contact was from the point of view that I can actually remember. Metamorphosis and the background that Cochrane was given in that. Yeah, well, as far as storylines and continuing continuity, I'm not going to argue with you, but I actually happen to like First Contact a lot on its own, standing alone. And if the humans attack the Vulcans, then it's already a divergence from what happened in the regular universe, which would mean we were already in the Mirror Universe. And that would take us back to possibly the whole World War II, Nazis winning, and that being the origin of the Mirror Universe. So I think it all still goes together pretty well. But as usual, Gene presents a very well thought out email that I pretty much agree with.
As somebody who's just started watching Enterprise, I am going to say that what I did was I googled best episodes of Enterprise for the first two seasons and only watched the good ones, which amounted to about 13 shows. That tells you everything you need to know. And then from series 3 onwards, started watching it properly. And if you do that, Enterprise is actually pretty good.
I liked Enterprise. I watched it from, you know, after it was off, I had watched it from beginning to end. I had pretty much binged it. And I enjoyed watching it. So sue me. What can I tell you?
Was the Borg one included in that, Andy?
No.
Yeah, I wouldn't think it would be.
From a continuity point of view, the Borg episode is problematic. From a horror movie point of view, the Borg episode is actually pretty good.
It's
pretty entertaining from the horror movie perspective.
They never catch the name of the Borg because I guess the ship fell there because it time wibbly wobbly stuff.
From the first contact Borgs that went back in time.
Right.
And one of them was frozen, and, you know, in some ice or whatever, obviously if they're frozen. And he defrosts and reactivates and starts to take over and, you know, assimilate people.
Yeah.
Okay. And so did that Borg survive because of the super soldier serum running through its veins?
Yes, but it lost its shield.
I am Rogers of Borg.
No, it's fine. I watched Enterprise. I watched Enterprise every week for the first two seasons, and it was mostly satisfying, but season 3 was just a really competitive year for television. I was in grad school. I could only watch so many shows. And the season 3 premiere did not grab me as well as the season premieres of other shows. That all started, like, you know, apparently everything I was looking for from Enterprise that I wasn't getting started season 3, episode 2, and they finished episode 1 the way they originally planned, and episode 1 was all I watched from that season. So I've picked it up on Blu-ray. I need to go back and watch it, because apparently everything I was looking for would have started the week after I gave up on it.
Oh, you can always go back and watch it. It's the beauty of television in the current day and age. It's all available to us.
Yep, and for the 50th anniversary, all of Star Trek is back on Netflix in Canada. I know the U.S. has had it all for... Yep, I know the U.S. had it for a long time, and then for a while there, when it first launched, Canada had all of it, and then after a few months, they dropped it to Next Gen only. But now it's all back.
Yep, it's all back, and the new show as well.
What?
That starts in January, we were getting on Netflix.
In most of the world, in the U.S., Star Trek Discovery is going to have the initial broadcast on CBS before going to All Access. Canada is going to have the initial episode of the pilot on CTV, then continue on Space, and then Bell TV's streaming service is going to have the rest of the episodes after a short delay. So we don't get it on Netflix. The rest of the planet gets it on Netflix with a 24-hour delay.
Right. You want to... we'll close this one out and read some email in the next episode, I guess.
Okay.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Wait, whoa, put those brakes on, Paul. What are we doing next time?
Next time, an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets. An episode that really shouldn't be titled Fascination.
I'm fascinated by your thought.
Does it really qualify as all-new?
Well, the credits aren't new.
I think it gave me constipation.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.